from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, from right where I want to be, on one side of the street, Fox News, on the other side, 30 Rock. Yes, that's the sweet spot. I'm in New York City. And right outside, up on and down 6th Avenue is an ethnic street, I mean a really ethnic street fair. They're selling I Heart New York t-shirts out there. That is how ethnic it is. Maybe I missed something, but it seems to me like a major marketing opportunity, or branding opportunity at least, went by the boards a couple weeks ago. Because they didn't call it 9/11 plus 10. Why not? Those t-shirts would seem to me would be, and I'm just happy that I have arrived someplace, ladies and gentlemen, unlike a couple weeks ago where I was bopping back and forth between Milwaukee, and Boise, where I didn't have to go via regional jet. Have you ever flown on a regional jet? You know what a regional jet is. I would call it a stripped-down crosstown bus, except that's a profound insult to the crosstown bus people. But it's not where you want to be. New York, of course, is proud to proclaim its centrality in our universe. It is the fashion capital of the world, the finance capital. These are the banners that hang down from the streetlights when you walk around the city. The one, I think I mentioned this before a few times ago when I was in New York. The one that puzzles me is real estate capital of the world. What can that possibly mean? Most expensive real estate, I guess. But not really. Dubai? Singapore? But there, it's part of a series of tributes to the cultural import of this city. And my favorite, a couple weeks ago, I was here, and I paid a sentimental journey because as a kid, I worked on Madison Avenue at an ad agency. And yeah, Mad Men really nailed it. But I worked at an ad agency, and so I thought, I'm going to walk down there and see what it's like. And it was very much like as it was. It hasn't really changed, except that they now have banners denoting the cultural import of that part of New York City to our world. And they've denoted it by having famous advertising slogans on the banners. So, yes, there, you can stand at the corner of 40th and Madison and see a city banner on a city streetlight paid for by city money, I think, that says, with awe, reverence, and just a little bit of nostalgia, home of Where's the Beef. And, of course, Where's the Beef, actually, according to the Chicago Desk, was written in Chicago. So it's not true either, but, you know, that's not the you're missing the point. It's symbolism. It's reverence. It's awe. I would hope that in the future, if they discover that technical support was invented here in New York, that there'll be a banner on the streetlights memorializing, I want you to go ahead and start up your computer. In quotes, you know, a nice, respectful banner. Ladies and gentlemen, news of AFAC. Defense and Security Equipment International has permanently shut down the Pakistan Ordnance Factory stand and Pakistan's Defense Export Promotion Organization Pavilion after promotional material was found on those stands at a London expo promoting cluster bombs. This has nothing to do with radio stations. This is, you know, they use it in war. Statement said the promotional material was found containing references which on closer inspection was found to be in breach of export controls and contractual requirements of the exhibitions. So if you want to know where to buy your cluster bombs, don't go to that street fair on 6th Avenue. No. Go to our friends in Pakistan. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the digital wonderland. Actually, has been covered for this broadcast. So, but news of public broadcasting has not. And this, I think, takes us all where we want to be. I know if you're like me, you say at the end of a public television pledge drive, if you notice that it happened, damn, I'm going to miss those Susie Orman infomercials. Damn, I'm going to miss those John Tesh Red Rocks concert reruns. Well, not anymore. WQED in Pittsburgh is launching a digital channel, all pledge programming all the time. It will include, quote, local pledge programming that has previously aired on the main channel, as well as national pledge programming that we were not able to schedule on the main channel, says the spokesperson for the channel. Viewers will be asked, of course, to make a contribution, just like on any other pledge program. The new channel will be another way for WQED to maximize revenue. You want to do that? Porn, babe. And in addition, it'll be a testing ground for new national pledge shows. So if you're not getting enough pledge programming content from your public TV station, demand more. And please give. Hello, welcome to the show. From the capital of the world, New York City, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, the apologies of the week.
This so sorry.
First up, a couple of apologies by our Austrian friends. Austria's Finance Minister Maria Fechter, I said Fechter, apologized to those offended by her comments comparing criticism of bankers and rich people to, yes, the persecution of Jews. Fechter made the comparison at a European Union finance ministers meeting in Poland. In Europe, we are not pirating the banks and the wealthy. This has already happened once, especially in the area against the Jews, but also against similar groups, and that drove us to two wars, she said. We must do everything so that this scenario does not recur. On the next day, she apologized for any offense caused. I apologize to those who felt hurt by my comments, she said in a statement. She clarified that the crimes of National Socialism and in particular the Holocaust are not comparable to anything else. And Austrian state television, ORF. You know, it's just like NBC. It's ORF. Apologized this week for broadcasting a National Socialist anthem. Is there a theme here? Performed by a contestant on a talent show. A 68-year-old man. 68-year-old man, you see. Played the Horst Wessel song on his harmonica in a pre-taped broadcast of the show Great Opportunity, announcing the song as a 19th century folk song. It was an editorial error which we regret very much, ORF said. ORF is in the process of investigating whether the incident amounts to neo-Nazi propaganda, punishable under Austrian law. The Horst Wessel song was happened to be the anthem of the German National Socialist Party, but only a 68-year-old guy would know that, I guess. Yahoo apologized this week after people using its email service were prevented from sending messages about anti-Wall Street demonstrations over the weekend. The company said an external spam filter had blocked the messages, but maintained it was inadvertent. It said the problem has since been resolved. Inadvertent blocking of messages about the thing. Dateline Kalamazoo, Michigan. Western Michigan University President Dr. John Dunn offered a public apology during his annual convocation this week. He apologized for the university's scheduling of Homecoming Day on October 8th, which is Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, the holiest day of the year in the Jewish faith. He called it an oversight officials did not intend, saying the university is taking steps to make sure it never happens again. Steps, like buying a calendar, you see. That would be a step. A solar panel company in Japan, you think Solyndra has problems? A solar panel company in Japan, sorry, in eastern China, let's just move that over to China, at the center of violent protests, you see, over toxic waste. It apologized this week for the trouble it had caused and promised to clean up the mess, perhaps by buying a calendar. The protests began last week when as many as 500 people stormed a compound owned by Jinko Solar. Protesters overturned vehicles before being dispersed after waste from the factory, which manufactures photovoltaic panels, cells, and wafers, killed large numbers of fish in a nearby river. That's green, isn't it? That's green killing of fish. 500 protesters in China. I bet Yahoo blocked that inadvertently. Arab City, Alabama. Did you know there was such a place? Arab Alabama? I wonder how they get treated by their neighbors over in Good Christian Alabama. Arab City School Superintendent John Mullins is reversing a policy he started a decade ago, allowing every home football game at Arab High School to start with a prayer. The policy has been under scrutiny since officials received a letter from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The letter stated that a parent whom it did not identify objected to the pregame prayers. Mullins said school officials don't know who has been offended, and he apologized if they've offended anyone. He said the tradition doesn't comply with the Constitution, and school officials are going to end it. All Arab high school football games will now begin with a moment of silence. Like that. Like that one right there. That was an example. Hey, remember the Danish film director Lars von Trier, who apologized for saying he was a Nazi? There is a theme to today's apologies, isn't there? He'd been at Cannes, the premiere of a film that he'd like me to mention. Answering a question, he gave a rambling answer, which he alluded to the fact he believed he was Jewish until his mother told him on her deathbed that her husband was not his real father. He said he was very happy being a Jew, but then I found out I was really a Nazi. He was then declared a persona non grata by the Cannes Festival. Well, now his movie is coming out at the New York Film Festival, so he's doing another promotional stunt, saying he's not really sorry. In the current issue of a magazine, GQ, he says, "To say I'm sorry for what I said is to say I'm sorry for what kind of person I am. I'm sorry for my morals, and that would destroy me as a person. It's not true. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry for what I said. I'm sorry that it didn't come out more clearly. I'm not sorry that I made a joke, but I'm sorry that I didn't make it clear that it was a joke. But I can't be sorry for what I said. It's against my nature." And when my film opens nationwide, I'll be back to revisit this. Oh, yes, it's a theme show. German fashion titan Hugo Boss has apologized for using forced labor during World War II in order to manufacture uniforms for the Nazis. Yes, Hugo Boss. Yes, the same Hugo Boss. Sure, you look good in it. The apology coincides, does it really, with the release of a book the company has commissioned about its past. Boss claimed after the war he'd only had to manufacture Nazi uniforms to kickstart his business. The book disputes these claims. Though Boss was not directly involved in incidents of forced labor, he also, quote, failed to put a stop to them. "You just go ahead with your forced labor. I'll be over here." A press release about a new edition of the Times of London Atlas. I wonder if that's owned by Rupert Murdoch. Times of London is. Yes, it is, because it's published by HarperCollins. So a press release about the new edition of the Atlas says the area, publisher has apologized for saying that 15% of Greenland's permanent ice cover has had to be erased in the Atlas between 1999 and 2011. "This was done without consulting the scientific community and was incorrect," says HarperCollins. "We apologize for this and will seek the advice of scientists on any future public statements." Any future public statements? Any? The Times Atlas describes itself as providing the world's most prestigious and authoritative atlases and maps today. HarperCollins says the Atlas arrived at the erroneous Greenland statistic by comparing Greenland's ice cap between the 10th edition and the newly published 13th edition. The error was reportedly generated from the map. The company insisted it stands by the accuracy of the maps in this and all other editions of the Times Atlas. The Atlas has faced scathing criticism since the launch of the new edition from scientists who said the loss of ice from Greenland was greatly exaggerated. Stafford County, Virginia School Superintendent Randy Bridges apologized this week to Colonial Forge high school students who were appropriately exercising their freedom of speech. Many of them wore yellow shirts to school this week to support student Brian Thompson, who was suspended after running onto the football field in a banana costume during halftime at a game last Friday. Administrators asked students to remove the yellow shirts worn in solidarity with the banana costume wearing student. Some even received Saturday detention. Now, Superintendent Bridges calls many of the school's actions inappropriate. So we have a First Amendment right to wear a T-shirt that comments on... Interesting. The British government will compensate relatives of victims of the 1972 Northern Ireland shootings by British troops that became known as Bloody Sunday, they announced this week. "We acknowledge the pain felt by these families for nearly 40 years and that members of the armed forces acted wrongly," a spokeswoman from the ministry said. "For that, the government is deeply sorry. We're in contact with the families' solicitors, and where there is legal liability to pay compensation, we will do so." Unsaid. Where there isn't, go chase a mule. Britain's opposition Labour Party has apologized after a former government minister criticized Belgium and Denmark as second-rate countries. Alan West, the security minister in Britain's previous government and a member of the House of Lords, made the remark as his party announced new ideas. Yes, a political party has new ideas. This just in. West said this week that Britain's economic ties and permanent membership in the United Nations Security Council meant it still wields global influence. He says, "These mean we are not a second-tier power. We are not bloody Denmark or Belgium." As ex-head of Britain's Navy, West has blamed previous gaffes, he's done them before, on the fact that he is, quote, a simple sailor, not a politician. But wait, there are more to come, ladies and gentlemen. No, we've had this one. I'm just going through them here. Maybe there aren't any more. Oh, yes. Here we are. A hairdresser from Dallas, Isis Brantley, said she was shocked when a TSA agent stopped her as she passed through a checkpoint in Atlanta. She was heading down an escalator after already being screened when TSA agents said they wanted to check her hair for explosives. The agents began patting down Brantley's big afro right on the train platform. She complained to a TSA supervisor who has apologized. Dateline Scranton, Pennsylvania. Michael T. Conahan's upbringing by a domineering, brutal father who cut ethical corners as the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, laid the seeds for the Kids for Cash scheme that landed the former judge in federal prison for 17 and a half years, his attorney says. In an apologetic statement to the court, Conahan said 2 years of therapy led him to understand all the wrong I've done and why I did it, and to try to understand how I can atone for it. He was convicted of taking bribes to send juveniles to privately owned prisons. No, it's a nice thing to do. The actress who appeared in porn movies allegedly involving the Los Angeles Fire Department has apologized to the firefighters for her role in the filming. Some L.A. firefighters allegedly allowed producers of two porn movies to shoot sex scenes with their engines as props. In one movie, porn actress Charlie Chase climbs onto L.A. Fire Engine 263 and performs, according to Channel 4 in Los Angeles, lewd acts on a fire engine. Yeah, it's hot. I just want to say I am so sorry to the firefighters involved, Chase wrote on her website. It was not my intention for anyone to get hurt or fired. It was just a fun day. She also wrote that news people bend and twist what really happened and the firefighters were not involved in us invading the truck for the porn shoot. But firefighters assigned to Engine 263 have yet to explain how the porn actress got free access to their truck for several minutes. Let me imagine the possible scenarios. I'm just over here imagining. I'm still imagining. I'll be with you in a moment. Okay, I'm done. I got it. So the L.A. Fire Department's Professional Standards Division is conducting an investigation to determine whether firefighters did, in fact, allow the porn producers access to their engines. That would be a violation of fire department policy. But, of course, the revelation is that porn stars have websites. I don't know why that should come as a surprise to me. Yes, it does. A man who was arrested on his way to an anti-royal demonstration on the day of the wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton received an apology and compensation from London police. We'll see if the demonstrators in New York receive apologies shortly. A Covington, Georgia man says he was mistakenly stopped at gunpoint Friday by an Atlanta police sergeant. The policeman apparently mistook the sedan the man was driving for a police SUV parked nearby. I felt like I was being carjacked, Rashid McCall said. He was stopped by a man running up to him out of the corner of his eye with a gun pointed at me saying, "Get out of my car, that's my car." McCall said he quickly raised his hands and walked, waited for the sound of a gunshot. The man opened the door, looked inside the car briefly, then holstered his weapon and apologized, McCall said. "Oh, this is not my car," McCall said, recounting the officer's words as the ordeal ended. At no time did the officer announce he was a policeman. The police car was a white Ford Explorer. McCall's car was a white Toyota Camry. Check me. Camry is a sedan. An Explorer is an Explorer. And the CEO of Netflix said he was sorry for mishandling a recent price increase that caused customers to cancel the service in droves. You don't need to be in a drove to cancel a service, do you? Those droves are hard to reserve. But the apology was drowned out by a decision that angered subscribers all over again. The company splitting into two services, so you'll be getting two bills. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Nazi edition, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Now, news of News Corp, in case you haven't been keeping up with the police corruption and phone hacking scandal. Rupert Murdoch's News of the World hacked extensively into the voicemail of a member of the cabinet in Britain's former Labour Party government, according to three people familiar with the matter. That's two more sources than the New York Post uses. The unauthorized access to voicemails left for Dennis McShane in 2004 and 5, as he served for as Minister for Europe, is one of a handful of cases to surface involving a serving government official in the phone hacking scandal. A private detective hired by the weekly tabloid, now shuttered, heard and hacked the voicemails left for McShane, according to these three people familiar with documentary evidence held by British police. That means the cops are leaking. McShane is still a member of Parliament. But more nice things. News Limited, the News Corporation subsidiary in Australia, is going to be rebranded as News Australia. In part because, quote, other people are defining our brand for us, unquote. This is in a manifesto written by News Limited's director of marketing strategy. Not just marketing. Marketing strategy, ladies and gentlemen. Is there a director of marketing tactics under him? It dubs the name change Project Darwin. See, because they're evolving. Or because they're going to move to Darwin. The various reasons are given to evolve the name. Oh, yeah, it is evolving. They include the start of charging people for using the website, improving how it sells advertising, and as a way to connect with employees to articulate a desired culture and shared values and ethics across the news group. According to the manifesto, News reflects and fights for the values of Middle Australia. See? But employee research last year had discovered a misalignment between the values the group espouses and those which it enacts. It was seen as, quote, an arrogant newspaper company, difficult to deal with, and one that was yet to unleash the power of its combined platform strength. Oh, I think it's unleashing its power. Me, I'm just... Up to a dozen News International executives, including Rebecca Brooks, former head of the British arm of the Octopus, were told in 2006 that the Metropolitan Police had evidence that more than one News of the World journalist was implicated in the phone hacking scandal. That is new information obtained by the Independent newspaper in London, which challenges the timetable publicly stated by Rupert Murdoch and his son of when and how they first became aware of the extent of illegality at the tabloid. The new evidence is likely to be central into the investigations into the Murdoch empire, revealing that police informed the company 2 years earlier that they had uncovered strong circumstantial evidence implicating more than just the one rogue journalist that the Murdochs had blamed. These things happen. And finally, Britain's first female spy boss has told how journalists at one of Rupert Murdoch's newspapers launched a secret campaign to uncover her personal life. That's right, spying on a spy. Don Martin was right. They discovered where she shopped, where she held her bank account, even bragged that they could access her medical records. Dame Stella Remington, who became the first director general of the equivalent of the FBI to be named publicly and to have official photographs released, has revealed how she herself became a target for spying by the Sunday Times, the classy part of the News International group in Britain. Nice people doing nice things. News of News Corp, ladies and gentlemen. Why bother to copyright it? Nobody else is covering it. Okay, it's a copyrighted feature, this broadcast. You got it.
She was a girl who believed in her heart she was only hiding in case you might see in her face she was lonely. Could have been taught to believe in herself in a fashion, showing compassion and telling her, oh Lord, what you waiting for, a tidal wave to come. Oh Lord, what you waiting for, a tidal wave. Hiding till night, she saw beautiful things in the moonlight, speaking her thoughts and then letting her spirit take full flight. Who would believe it that someone could change so completely? Bumps in the night, sick inside that was telling her, oh Lord, what you waiting for, a tidal wave to come. Oh Lord.
Lord, what you waiting for your life to run out then? Oh Lord, what you waiting for a tidal wave to come? So high the moon is shining bright and clearly again. The rooftops turn to mountain loveliness then. Alive and filled with awe that's beautiful. She was a girl who believed in her heart. She was tragic. Fantasy showed her that playing a role worked like magic. Time kept on passing, but she wouldn't dare to be older. Making sure nobody bold her would scold her and say, oh Lord, what you waiting for? A tidal wave to come. Oh Lord, what you waiting for? You'll have to run out then. Oh Lord, what you waiting for? A tidal wave to come. Oh Lord, what you waiting for? Your life to run out then.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who for 8 years was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential.
Confidential. I've never been a big one for self-promotion. In fact, if they ever gave a Nobel Prize for lack of self-promotion, in all honesty, I'd probably have to nominate myself. So the process of going out in front of the public in order to achieve enhanced sales position for my memoir wasn't all that pleasurable. Oh, there were the secure, undisclosed, expensive hotel rooms with the password-protected porn channels and the nice meals, most of which I couldn't eat, thanks to my old pal, Mr. I Used to Be Your Heart. But basically, it was a thoroughly repetitive process of explaining the painfully obvious to the painfully oblivious. Oh yes, along the way, there'd been some friends. Rush Limbaugh went so far as to tell his listeners if they didn't buy my book, they'd no longer be eligible to pay $100 a month for his newsletter. I guess it's fair to say that gentleman doesn't share my distaste for self-promotion. I wouldn't name a newsletter after myself. Heck, I wouldn't allow them to name an Institute for Enhanced Interrogation Studies at a secure, undisclosed college after me. In any case, I was learning to endure the indignities. Face powder, the miking up, involved in book touring. When something cockeyed happened, just as the memoir hit the bestseller list of a newspaper whose bestseller list is the only thing I trust, it all stopped. The powder, the miking, the entire panoply. But as people who crossed me inside the Bush administration could testify, if they dared to publish their memoirs, I'm not easily discouraged. So I invited my book publicist over for an emergency strategy session in the most persuasive way. I sent a secure, undisclosed car to pick her up. Wednesday, 10:48 a.m.
Mr. Vice President?
Just a minute, Philia. I'm finishing up a call. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, just saying, Mr. Vice, I'd love to have you back on the show anytime.
Well,
but in all honesty, I'd be amazed if any of my viewers hadn't bought the book yet. I think you need to reach a little beyond the base. And just my opinion. Mm-hmm. Gotta go. Show to do. Semper Fi.
That's weird.
His reluctance to have you return?
No, no. Neither of us was in the Marines. Okay, Philia. I saw the schedule for today.
Yes, sir.
A webcast interview with Alan Keyes.
Oh, yes, sir. It has quite a following among...
Among who?
I should imagine among Alan Keyes fans.
Look, sister, maybe you've never done book publicity for someone who operates at my level before.
I did the Jimmy Carter book.
My point exactly. When it comes to getting things done that I think should be done, my policy has always been a little twist on the Clintonian model. Don't ask. Tell. Get me on the Sunday shows. Get me on the late night shows. Get me on Anderson. Cooper's daytime show. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the fate of freedom depends on that book staying at the top of that list for another week.
All due respect, sir, I should think it might be a wee exaggeration.
I'd like to suggest in the strongest possible terms that you keep your shoulds and your wees out of this particular colloquy.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Vice President. Well, there is something we could have you do tonight. You'd be on with Larry King, but...
Well, that's perfect. He's as dim as a gambler's memory and softer than a starlet's neck.
Well, that is quite apt, but...
Listen, my dear. I happen to have information that your dad served as a longtime love spigot for a minister in the Tony Blair government. You wouldn't want that information to subtly show up in the news of the world.
You are correct, I wouldn't, for two reasons.
Just book me on that show and find your own way back to the office. I'm going to need the car. I used to push around people 100 times more powerful than her before breakfast. But of course, these days, there is no breakfast. So I was in the so-called green room, in point of actual fact, it's no greener than the green zone, waiting to be feminized by the makeup fairy. Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. So, Larry, I guess I'm going to be on with you.
Oh, Mr. Vice President.
I'm sorry, I was having a little nap. Yeah. Dreaming that there actually is a better summer fruit than the peach. Weird. So how's your book doing? I haven't read it yet, but it's definitely on my if-I-ever-read-a-book list. Well, thanks, Larry. Have to say it's been a while since I watched your show.
Oh, it's okay, Mr. Vice President. It's been a while since
I mean, to be perfectly candid, given my condition, it was very often an option between watching television and watching my book being written.
Hey, I know the feeling. I've been there. I had more stuff stuck in my chest than Jane Mansfield. But
so I guess Philly had told your producer what I'd really like to perhaps downplay just a shade is the notion that there's some kind of rift between myself and President Bush. I mean, yes, it's true we haven't talked since I sent him the book.
No, I understand. I bet he's embarrassed that he hasn't gotten through it yet. You know, could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
But
okay, gentlemen. Hi, I'm Jason, the PA on the show.
Hey.
Joy is delighted that you're both joining us. The third person on the panel is Felicity Danger. She's kind of a wacky blogger. She'll be the liberal on the panel. And I hope you got the topics we're going to cover, the space junk falling down, the stock market gyrations, and which was worse, the Emmys or the Republican debate. Anybody need water?
Joy?
Beha, we're on her show. I don't do a show anymore. Haven't for a year. What can you do? They're nuts over here.
Panel?
Yes, you're representing the right, and Larry here, of course.
Is representing the Jews.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I just forgot something.
Oh, is that anything we can help you with?
As a matter of fact, it is. You can fire my publicist. One of these days, maybe when I get a few thousand more heartbeats installed, I'll listen all the way through to a sentence that begins with the word, but. And a partial diary for mid-September 2011. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole. Fewer than a third of English schools have signed up to the government's plan to use, quote, the spirit of the Olympics to revive competitive sport in schools, raising further doubts about the long-term legacy of the London Games. Only 6,500 schools out of 23,000 in England have registered for the School Olympics.
according to the Observer newspaper, forcing the organizers to extend the registration deadline from September to when would you like? Or November at this point. The figures are particularly disappointing for the more than 17,000 primary schools, many of which lack the facilities or staff to deliver competitive sports for their students, even with some government help. When he launched the school Olympics earlier this year, following an outcry over government cuts to the overall school sports budget, the Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt said he wanted them to bring, quote, the magic of the Olympics into every school in the country. Ministers of the government said the games would revive competitive sport between schools as well as sports in schools as teachers and children became involved in high-profile new inter-school competitions in 30 different sports, culminating in finals at the Olympic Park itself. But many schools, particularly primary schools, have found the plans unconvincing. Not only do they lack grounds to stage the competitions, but they have no means of transporting children from school to school to take part. But wait, there's more. The head of the National Olympic Committee in Britain says recent figures show that 21 of 30 selected sports have a decrease in the number of participants since 2007. The British Olympic Association chairman says a great deal of work still needs to be done to increase sports participation, which was one of the major goals of having the Olympics come to England. And the International Olympic Committee will consider evidence from the BBC before launching a full investigation into allegations that boxing officials discussed selling two gold medals at the London Olympics to Azerbaijan in exchange for money. The Amateur International Boxing Association announces it has formed a special investigation committee to examine the charges. However, in a statement announcing the committee, the AIBA appeared to prejudge the committee's work, describing the allegations as preposterous and untrue, and saying it was not aware of any credible evidence. It also issued a defense of the man at the center of the allegations, Ivan Kotobach. He is a man of integrity, and AIBA trusts him and respects its work, they said. The allegations center on a $10 million loan from an unnamed Azerbaijani investor to help fund four U.S. franchises in World Series boxing. Anonymous whistleblowers told the BBC program that World Series Boxing Chief Operating Officer Kotobach had told them Azerbaijani boxers would receive two gold medals in London in return. The Olympics, it's a movement, and everybody needs one. Every day. Now, on the subject of why you'd want to have the Olympics, it became clear to me last time I was in London, and I think I shared this with you on a broadcast from London, that you cannot leave public transport that's going to take you to the Olympics and get to the Olympic Stadium without walking through, that's right, a giant new mall that's just opened. It's like the airport, only worse. And while folks in the Gulf Coast are discovering that there is still unweathered oil from last year washing up on the beach, unweathered, meaning it's like still got the power to poison stuff, hasn't been sun weathered, it's been sitting at the bottom of the ocean, nice, fresh, from the BP oil spill. BP's got bigger fish. They've got Olympic fish to fry.
Everyone at BP is dedicated to fueling the success of London 2012. Driving over 5,000 games vehicles with our most advanced fuels and engine oils. Working to provide lower carbon fuels from energy grasses. Supporting the Cultural Olympiad to bring the arts to many more people. And through our Target Neutral program, aiming to offset the carbon footprint of millions of spectator journeys, as well as the footprint of the British team we're proud to support.
Yeah, It couldn't be a British company, could they?
It's time to end my lonely holiday and bid the country a hasty farewell. So on this gray and melancholy day, I'll move to a Manhattan hotel. I'll dispose of my rose-colored chattels and prepare for my share of adventures and battles. Here on the 27th floor, looking down on the city, I hate and adore. Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, it spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steel. Is often mingled with pain. Lovers who bless the dark on benches in Central Park. It's autumn in New York. It's good to live it again.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. I bet you haven't heard this. A Lloyd's insurance syndicate, Lloyd's of London, has begun a landmark legal case against Saudi Arabia. Really? Why? Accusing the kingdom of indirectly funding Al-Qaeda, demanding the repayment of $170 million it paid out to victims of the 9/11 attacks. The Brighton-based Lloyd's syndicate, which paid $215 million to compensation to companies and individuals involved, alleges that the oil-rich Middle Eastern superpower bears primary responsibility for the atrocity because Al-Qaeda was supported by banks and charities acting as agents and alter egos for the Saudi government. This according to The Independent in London. The detailed case, which names a number of prominent Saudi charities and banks as well as a leading member of the Al-Saud royal family, will cause embarrassment to the Saudi government. Outlined in a 156-page document filed in western Pennsylvania, near Shanksville, where the Flight 93 crashed, the claim suggests the nine defendants knowingly provided resources, including funding to Al-Qaeda in the years before the attack, and encouraged anti-Western sentiment, which increased support for the terror group. The complaint quotes heavily from U.S. diplomatic cables released by WikiLeaks, detailing investigations by U.S. authorities into Al-Qaeda It attempts to establish funding links between some Saudi charities and the terror group and implicate the Saudi government in that funding through its support of the charities. It singles out the Saudi Joint Relief Committee for Kosovo and Chechnya, which was alleged by UN officials to have been used as a cover by several Al-Qaeda operatives, including two directors of the charity. It alleges at the time that charity was under the control of Prince Naif bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, half-brother of King Abdullah, and the long-standing Saudi Interior Ministry. The Saudi embassies in London and Washington did not respond to requests for a response to the allegation. The 9/11 Commission found there was no evidence that the Saudi government or senior Saudi officials individually funded Al-Qaeda. Diplomatic cables obtained by WikiLeaks showed American officials remained concerned that the Saudi authorities were not doing enough to stop money being passed to the terror group by Saudi citizens.
Yeah.
It's nutty. These things happen, ladies and gentlemen. You know? Governments and people and things with funding and stuff. Now, very quickly, clean, cheap, safe, clean, too cheap, cheap to claim, to mean, to meter. Our friend the Atom.
Yeah, I like that street fair.
You do, Eddie, huh?
Yeah, got a T-shirt.
Eddie the Atom, got a T-shirt. There's plenty of disagreement over whether U.S. nuclear power plants are ready to face disasters and run responsibly. The disaster in Fukushima has laid bare one truth in which experts and officials from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission agree. A disaster here would result in losses requiring the government to make payouts of epic proportions. That's because Fuk will cost anywhere between $74 and $260 billion. It's cheap, according to Japanese experts, while the nuclear insurance fund in this country, established by a 1957 law, only has $12.6 billion in reserve. It can't handle those losses, says Wharton School professor Howard Kunreiter, who specializes in public policy. That's okay. We got taxpayers' money. German engineering conglomerate Siemens is closing the door on nuclear energy, ending the manufacture of all components used exclusively in the nuclear energy field. The chief executive, Peter Lauscher, said the decision was a response to the shift in German public and political opinion towards nuclear energy, actually against nuclear energy, after the Fuk accident. The Japanese disaster triggered a revival of Germany's plan to go nuclear-free by 2022. Yeah, it's free. Oh, and Japan is ordering more tests on rice growing near a crippled nuclear plant after finding elevated levels of radiation, government officials said. A sample of unharvested rice contained 500 becquerels of cesium per kilogram. Radioactive cesium was spewed from the Fuk plant. Under Japanese regulations, rice with up to 500 becquerels is considered safe for consumption. So it just missed, just this close to being safe. Doesn't that drive you nuts when that happens? And news of the warm very quickly, ladies and gentlemen. The first big-picture study of the effects of rapidly rising temperatures in the Northeast Atlantic shows that a major shift in fish stocks is already underway. It isn't all bad news. The research published in Current Biology, I read it for the ads, shows that some fish's losses are other fish's gain. The study by Dr. Steve Thompson of University of Bristol finds that the Northeast Atlantic, described as the cauldron of climate change with warming occurring at a rate of four times the global average over the last three decades. So fish that like warm water have increased, you see. Fish in European waters have undergone profound community-level changes related to the dramatic warming changes in the region. The vast majority of common fish species have already shown a change in abundance that relates to the temperatures. Three of every four fish species have grown in numbers with warming. Catches of cold-loving species, including haddock and cod, have dropped by half. So, eat more warm-weather fish. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness. We got better stuff to do.
All right. Well, I don't think we have time for anything anymore, sir, but thank you for the note. That is indeed the end of this week's broadcast of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like more Austrian apologies next week, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. What did the t-shirt say, Eddie?
I love nuclear.
Wow. That is ethnic. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Steve Hosek here at New York Premier Radio Networks. And thanks to Trevor for helping to make today's show possible. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the 46,000 followers. Or go split off and form your old cult. Join them at The Harry Shearer. The email address for this broadcast and list of the music heard here on, just two of the low-hanging fruit, just two examples of the low-hanging fruit available for you at harryshearer.com. Comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Manhattan.